United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Recently, our president has made a distinction between Pittsburgh and Paris, favoring, of course, Pittsburgh. Maybe we can shed some light on the past tradition of maintaining relationships with the City of Light, with our friend Dr. Nelson Strobert. We're really going to be talking about persons of color in the City of Light and what it might mean for the ties between France and America. Strobert is, as you know, one of the co-hosts on this program, but he's also the author and a world traveler. His most his best-known book is Payne, Daniel Alexander Payne, Preceptor of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and he's working on several other projects, including a book on Martin Luther King and King's father, Martin Luther King Sr. Who are the persons that you studied, and why did you decide to pick them out in relationship to the City of Light, Paris?
Okay, well, as you know, I've always I'm a Francophile, and I certainly enjoy going to France. But I traveled to France in the 20th century, in 1867. But I wanted to know what about in 1967? Sorry about that.
Time travel is not dead.
But I always wanted to know who were others who traveled to Europe, and particularly African Americans who traveled to Europe in the 19th century. I wanted to know were they traveling there, and so I started looking at travel literature, and looking at some of these personalities, and so I chose David Dorr, who was a slave who traveled to Europe with his slave master, and we can talk about how that occurred. Then there was William Wells Brown, who was an abolitionist but also a runaway slave who journeyed to escape to Europe in order to not be recaptured by his slave owners. And then there was Daniel Alexander Payne, with whom I became acquainted with and worked on in the book, who also traveled to Europe, but particularly I looked at his time in Paris.
I didn't promise you, but I think mentally I did promise you that I would not make any digressions. But right away, I've got to say, into the 20th century, there are some famous persons of color who went to America, like Richard Wright.
Oh, Richard.
And others. And so, in a way, the message we're going to be giving is not entirely, and I hate to say this, but not entirely flattering to America, because the black experience here it was not as favorable as it was when they went abroad.
Well, exactly. I mean, we have Richard Wright, we have James Baldwin, we have Josephine Baker, have a number of artists, Tanner, who has one photo, framed artwork in the White House, but who's buried in Paris. Yeah. So you have these and opera singers who were not able to make a break here or sing publicly here in terms of wide audiences, they went over to Europe where they were accepted.
And by the way, I know you're much younger and all of our listeners are much younger than I am, but this still was going on with Marian Anderson up to the Second World War and beyond. So it is a contemporary issue. Let me ask you what the difference is with these folks. Aren't a lot of us tourists, like yourself and myself? I love to go abroad. Is there a difference?
There's a lot of literature on looking at the difference between the two. And to make it not go into complexities, one sees that the tourist views where he or she is visiting, but his or her relationship is always geared towards home, returning home. You see the sights, the famous sights, but you always are wanting to return home. That's your home base. For the traveler, becomes immersed into the place where he or she finds him or herself. And being sensitive to the context, the country, the culture, the people, etc., so that they immerse themselves rather than just getting a surface overview of the place.
Related to that is particularly the experiences of black travelers rather than tourists, and the literature they have left us. There's a considerable amount of black travel writing, and the people that you have chosen here, Brown, Dorr, and Payne, all left written impressions of their stay in Paris.
Very much so.
By the way, that's not unusual. We often, but they did it as a way of reflecting on themselves, on America, and on their experience as human beings.
Exactly. In a book entitled "African American Travel Narratives from Abroad," Gary Totten says that African American travel narrative deals with issues of identity, relation in relationship to mobility, cultural displacement, and a reshaped sense of self. I think that that becomes very, very important for the writer, mm-hmm. but also as one looks at the literature that has been written, this whole sense of identity of who am I, and not being the other. Mm-hmm. But looking at oneself in relationship to the other, mm-hmm. I think that and so that's so it becomes an important piece. Mm-hmm. And yet, for many years, black travel writing was not looked at mm-hmm. very seriously.
So this is a recent development.
It's recent in terms of the of their writing,
right,
documenting
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But blacks have been traveling for decades and for centuries.
You can probably now insert here the experiences of these three in particular. But it strikes me that of all the things they saw and did, what you're saying is that it helped them with a sense of identity. Often, those of us who've traveled have had this sense that we know better what it means to be an American when you're in a non-American situation.
Very much so. You know better
what it means to be what a particular denomination we are when we're engaged with people of another denomination.
Very much so. I think what's important with these three and others, African-Americans who traveled, was knowing what the dream and the promise of America was, and what they experienced.
Oh, yeah.
To say that, wait, this is the America that I should know and experience, and they have to travel abroad to experience that. That's the critical piece. And as all of them return to the United States.
Yeah. Well, they did not reject the United States in this.
They did not reject the United States. But I think they held up hope that the United States would be a place that incorporated all people.
Keep its promise. All are created equal and are born with certain inalienable rights. What about, let's start with Dorr. Was he the first one you mentioned?
Yeah. David Dorr was a slave, as I said. Was born in 1827 or 29, we're not quite sure, but in New Orleans, Louisiana. And he went to Europe with his slave master. And his slave master had said, you go with me to Europe, and upon our return, I will free you. Well, they traveled around and returned to the United States. The slave master did not free Dorr, and Dorr, remembering what he had said, escaped.
Yeah.
But then he wrote his book, A Colored Man's colored man round the world in 1858. And he takes this trip with the master.
This is before the Civil War then.
That's right, before the Civil War.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
This is 1851.
Yeah.
And he begins his journal. Mm-hmm. And what's important about this is that he chronicles his time. He's also in Europe. He's in the Middle East. He's in Africa, and for my purposes, he's set foot in Paris. But in the midst of this, he never forgets who he is as a black American, but he takes in and sees the sights like any tourist. And what is also remarkable about his book is that he does not mention, except for a few cursory sentences, his master. Mm-hmm. So you would think that he is a student, mm-hmm. Like many of our American students, going abroad. But here is this man who is a slave.
And is it William Brown?
Yeah, William Wells Brown. Mm-hmm. He was born a slave in 1849 in Lexington, Kentucky. And he goes to Europe, and because he is an escaped slave. And he runs away from his from the plantation and the masters, and he goes to England. And from New England, because the slave they're looking for him, he's able with some funds and some help from friends, he's able to go off to Europe. He lands in England, but then goes. He also travels over to France. And a few years into his trip, his daughters join him in Paris and goes to school in France. Mm-hmm. If we were in the United States, that would never have been that would not have come to pass.
Before we go on to Daniel Alexander Payne and what all this has to do with Paris, the City of Light, let me remind us that we're talking to Dr. Nelson Strobert, the author of Payne, a preceptor of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and of course the co-host of the Seminary Explorers. The fact is, I think, Nelson, that you are the one who has certainly the leading figure in the resuscitation of Daniel Alexander Payne in certain quarters, and I'll say more universally, he has, since you have done your research here, become almost a minor logo of Gettysburg, and therefore of United Lutheran Seminary, and also of the museums here and many other ways. He was a prominent figure, but somehow we needed to rediscover him. What about him did you find as far as his travel to Paris?
Well, by the time he goes to Europe, he's a bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Church.
So he's finished his education
He works in a parish in upstate New York,
right,
in a Presbyterian parish, and then works as a historiographer of the AME Church, and then he's elected bishop. Well, following the Civil War, there were many groups going to Europe to raise funds for the freed slaves to help support their living in the United States. And so he goes over there as president of Wilberforce University, which he's bishop and president of Wilberforce University in Ohio, to raise funds for Wilberforce University. And he goes there to raise funds, but in the midst of talking, raising funds, he takes advantage of Europe, and in particular, as I look at his time in France, he goes to lectures at the Sorbonne, he goes to lectures at the Collège de France, the Roman Catholic institution. Mm-hmm. He reads. But he also studies French, the French language. Mm-hmm. He studies French in the morning and goes to lectures in the afternoon. So he was a full immersion into French culture. Again,
a true traveler, not a tourist.
Exactly. And he makes contacts, and even some of the people he met there came back to the United States years later to give talks at Wilberforce University. I should also say that as he is there, he continues, he's a product of Gettysburg Seminary, but he also continues his relationship with Lutheran personalities and is friends with the president of the Lutheran Church of France and talks about his time and encounter with him.
We're really getting around to the important question: is what got them there, and then from that, what did they experience? I mean, we're talking as if these were ordinary travelers, and they're not, because there are people who are having dramatic experiences from from an oppressive culture, sad to say, in America, to one in which they were not only freed but welcomed.
Yeah, they were welcome, and you see that in each of the writings. Dorr talks about he's traveling on to other parts of Europe and the Middle East. But he says, "I said on my departure from Paris that I was leaving it to enjoy the anxiety to get back." So he wanted to come back to this city.
It's kind of like the Grand Tour in those days, isn't it? By the Grand Tour, I mean this is not just a happy weekend somewhere for a rock concert. People of wealth used to do these things and would spend a year or more.
Right, they'd finish their studies.
And it was part of their education.
They'd finish their formal studies, but then they would spend 1, 2, 3 years traveling around Europe to see the sights, to soak in Western culture, in the museums, etc. For the African American tourists, I would say it was their grand tour. Mm-hmm. It was also their graduate education. Where they Brown continued to write, send stories back of his travels in Europe to the newspaper, the black newspaper, and so people could follow his travels, and so they learned about what was going on over there, what blacks were experiencing over there that they were not experiencing in the United States.
Is it true that the experience is critical, that though some have met some very high-ranking French people, there's a sense in which one can walk down the street in Paris in those days and nobody's really going to notice? I don't know if I made that clear enough. In this country,
yes,
you walk down a street in 1850, especially if you're on the wrong street,
right,
and you'll be noticed.
Right.
So in Paris, you just are one of a group of people, of human beings.
You're not an
outsider.
You're not the outsider. And there were blacks, from Africa who were studying in Europe during the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And some of our legislators who traveled to Europe prior to the Civil War, when they got there, they saw blacks studying in the classroom, at the Sorbonne, with white students, French students, and it had to make a mark on their consciousness that this is going on here, and it wasn't going on back home in the United States.
You have one story about the meeting with Madame de Tocqueville. Tocqueville was the French observer of 19th century America, who was read by every American historian or anybody who's interested in the perception of America by outsiders, and how, in fact, the same person was it Dorr or was it Brown who met Victor Hugo? Hugo.
It was Brown who met Victor Hugo. He was there because of for the Paris Peace Conference, right. And Victor Hugo was the president of the Paris Peace Conference. He meets at a reception. He meets Madame de Tocqueville,
mm-hmm.
and who's standing in the center of this room, and with a bouquet in her hand. And he says, "I was about passing on when the gentleman who introduced me intimated that I was an American slave. At the announcement of this fact, the distinguished lady extended her hand and gave me a cordial welcome, at the same time saying, 'I hope you feel yourself free in Paris.'" Mm-hmm. You know, it's she couldn't let him pass by. You know, mm-hmm. that she recognized him as a human being, as a person, as a representative of the United States, mm-hmm. at this conference.
As an observer and a traveler yourself, we've got just one more minute, but let's shift to you personally, which reflects on what the other people have experienced. This is where we started. What is it about Paris that can help us to realize better who we are as Americans? Why did the City of Light attract people of color, and why does it still attract Americans of all sorts?
Right. I mean, it's people, you know, Americans travel there all the time. It's one of those travel cities. Yeah. I think part of it is for the African American, it is a place where one is free, one in the sense of just walking. One, it's not noticeable, you know, because it's an international city. But I've traveled in other parts. You know, people go to and from.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a place where there's intellectually stimulating, mm-hmm. culturally stimulating,
mm-hmm.
I guess as the 19th century visitors, it was a place of freedom. I dare say, and I'm sad to say, that with xenophobia that's surrounding the global context, that I don't know whether Europe and France will be the same because of some of the fear that is going on around the world, and that's sad, mm-hmm. Because it has been a place where this sense of freedom and hospitality, and the French liberation phrase of liberté, égalité, mm-hmm. fraternité, mm-hmm. Which Brown noticed over other public buildings around mm-hmm. town. I hope that still captures, and I think the new President Macron, has centered on that, which has bound French people together, not only for themselves but for the world.
And it would be a shame to cut ourselves off from those origins
exactly.
of Western civilization,
exactly.
which helps us identify who we are as Americans, not only historically, but existentially even at this moment.
Exactly.
Nelson Strobert is our guest today. Paris and Pittsburgh, Persons of Color and the City of Light. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.